Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. From a local business to a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Today on Two Black Guys with Good Credit, we dug into the crates for a classic episode. We hope you enjoy it.
Two Black Guys with Good Credit.
Who wants to be a millionaire? Well, to be honest, don't we all? Two Black Guys with Good Credit, we are doing our part to get you there with this week's guest, super successful business entrepreneur Stephen Hightower of Hightower's Petroleum. Black gold, Texas tea, oil, that's what we're talking about. Yes, oil. Stephen is here to share the secrets of his success. Pot up, sit back, and let's get it. Because we are talking big bucks, people, big tanks. Stephen is making it happen.
In the house.
Big Sean, why did you think it was important to bring Mr. Hightower here to Two Black Guys with Good Credit?
Well, Arlington, we recently did a show, Black Power, Black Money.
Wakanda,
and
baby,
I'm
there.
We got a lot of great response, so I said, let's dig deep and find somebody that can reflect that. And who better not but Mr. Steve Hightower himself, who has been ranked one of the companies has been ranked one of the 10th richest black companies in America. So
what?
10 meet 11.
Well, there you have it, Two Black Guys with Good Credit. We're about to get into it with Mr. Stephen Hightower. He's going to share the secrets of his success. Who does not want success, people? Keep it locked. Matt?
Thanks, Arlington. This sponsorship break is brought to you by Clean. Clean is a financial literacy program designed to educate youth in a fun and interactive way through class lessons, workshops, and web seminars. To bring it to a school or organization near you, please visit www.financiallyclean.com.
Two Black Guys with Good Credit is a show for the financially curious and the financially knowledgeable. Mr. Hightower, can I call you Stephen?
Absolutely.
Perfect. Stephen, can you explain to our audience a brief history of your business background, you know, past to present, kind of giving us the highlights, your shining moments, so to speak.
The jump shots and touchdowns, all that.
Exactly. First of all, thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak to your audience today.
Thank you for being here.
But Hightower's Petroleum Company is a result of a family-owned business. My father started in 1956, which is the year I was born. So I say to many people, I've been in business all my life and literally have never worked for anyone else but my family or myself. So I'm one of those unique individuals who have just been an entrepreneur and probably a real example of what a serial entrepreneur might look like.
That's great. That is great. Well, Dion, since we're talking about oil today, because that's
black
the industry
gold.
Mr. Hightower's in, can you give us a brief history of oil in the United States of America?
Absolutely. The Universal Oil, Gas, and Mining Company was the first black-owned oil company in the United States. It was also the first oil company that was fully operated by an all-black staff. It was founded by Odessa S. Strickland and located in Shreveport, Louisiana. It got its start right after the start of the Great Depression. So whenever everything else was falling apart, that's when they launched in 1930. The company also mined zinc, lead, and silver. But what's most fascinating is that the founder, Mr. Strickland, was also an inventor. So Odessa Strickland invented the instrument they called the electrometer. So this instrument was invented and used to discover oil deposits. And they said it was about 100% accurate, which is pretty amazing at these times. But yes, what I love is that he ended up creating this into a whole other business in itself by renting out this device for $50 to $75 per day. So this is just good stuff that we all need to know and learn when it comes to our history in the oil industry.
Nice. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Mr. Steve, now that we're buddies, getting back to you.
Now it's Steve.
Now it's Steve. What is a wholesale fuel supply company? Is it fair to say that you're the middleman in the sale of oil? Is that fair?
I don't consider myself a middleman. I consider myself as part of the supply chain in the delivery of fuel to the end users or the customers throughout the U.S., Mexico, Canada, and South Africa. Okay. So when we talk about the being a distributor or a wholesale jobber, as it's referred to in the industry, you're talking about someone who, after the refinery is put into the pipeline, there's someone who actually takes it and delivers it to the end user or users that may be for resale. And in the case where Hightower falls into that particular category, we then pick it up at terminals after it's in a pipeline, and we deliver it to people like FedEx, AK Steel, Kroger's, General Motors, Nissan, those types of customers who actually use it, whether it's in their vehicles for production or whether it's in their vehicles for day-to-day operations like a FedEx or Union Pacific Railroad. So a number of customers in a myriad of ways, we are the ones who actually deliver that product and actually make things happen.
So are you delivering that in planes, trains, boats?
We supply to casino river boats. We supply to trains. We supply to trucks, trucking companies. We supply to highway contractors that just do dirt work. We supply to all types of people. And the good thing about petroleum is you've got an unlimited amount of customers that you can actually feed into. And that's what I tell people when they're looking for a business to get involved with. Find a business where you've got an unlimited amount of customers. And if you only did 1% of those customers, you would probably not be able to handle all the business that you've got.
Well, my brother, we're calling my brother now.
Problem.
Let me know where these trucks dock at on the Eastern Seaboard, and I'm going to bring my SUV there up and fill it. But every time I let them know, Steve is my boy, let me get some gas.
Well, you know, the only problem with that is I have a very hard time selling to brothers and sisters that don't buy 7,000 gallons at a time.
What are you trying to say? Okay, let's go to the question now. I was just putting my place. Okay, we just recently did an episode once again, Black Power, Money Power. And one thing I admire about African-American that do certain types of business where it just doesn't cater to African-Americans. I find a lot of my friends and peers that want to start business African-American, they always look at a business that just caters to our people. And I like that your family, your father, I guess, thought differently. Was a forward thinker to think, like, I'm going to do a business that is satisfying across lines. So what inspired him to do that? Like, what made him have that foresight to think, like, I don't have to do just a black business?
Well, when my father started and our family business started, we started in a janitorial business. So I grew up in the cleaning in a janitorial business. Now, saying that, there is, in that particular business, you do have a B2C or a business to consumer, because we actually did carpets in people's homes, cleaned their houses, did windows, everything on the...
You personally?
Me personally, that's what I grew up doing, okay? But then there was a commercial side of that where we actually did banks and industrial facilities so on and so forth.
Got it.
As I began to grow into that and understand, I'm starting when I'm 6 years old, actually dusting the bottoms of chairs and baseboards because that's all we could do.
You're that chase, my son?
You know. But my mother, at that particular time, they didn't have babysitters, so we went to work with them at night, you know, actually cleaning.
That's how it
and
was.
As you grew up, you actually literally had accountants and employees coming, and you see business done on the kitchen table, which is the typical mom and pop startup business.
That's how I grew
and,
up.
And that's how you actually start, but that's how you get a visualization of what business is and what business can be. And many, right. many of us in the African American community don't have those types of examples and get to see that, okay? Even Absolutely. Though my father worked at Armco Steel around the clock for 40 years, he still had a business during that entire period of time where after he got off at Armco, he ran his business.
That is so interesting because we don't understand that. He was, you know, it's. I always say there's 24 hours in a day, and it's how you decide to utilize that 24 hours and how you try to maximize. And I always say, you know, how your dad was doing. He was hustling.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, he was hustling. And he was getting his family involved, and he was teaching them. You know, I bring my kids to the store, and I hopefully that they just pick up on something. And you are picking up on things and seeing how business works.
Right. And that's when I first found out sleep is overrated.
Oh, my God. That's when I have plenty of time to sleep when I'm dead. That's what I say.
That's right. And rest in peace.
Right. We always... one of the things that we always do is we talk to young people about the education, the idea that education equals time and time equals money. And while you're getting your education, you can get your hustle on and do something else. And as you were saying, you grew up working while you were starting at six. So I'm just going to ask you this question, but I kind of have the answer. Were your entrepreneurial juices starting to flow in high school and college?
My entrepreneurial juices began to flow in high school. Wow. And by the time I got to college, I was already flowing. Okay. So by when I was 18 years old, I actually negotiated my first commercial contract. And I want to make a very distinction between B2B and B2C, because in your previous comment, you had talked about, you know, many of us are looking for businesses that really cater to the African-American community.
Right. You agree
and,
with that comment?
And well, in that particular comment, what you're basically saying is you basically have a B2C or a business-to-consumer business.
Right. Business
yeah. I have a B2B, which is a business-to-business customer base. Wow. And when you begin to move into a B2B, then you're not talking about someone who have discretionary funds to spend. Mm-hmm. You're talking about someone who has to spend X amount of dollars in order to be a part of what they do.
They need, so they need the they, service. They
not,
need
not, and so in some cases, even with dealing with B2B, you can offer a service that someone may want as a luxury, or you may offer them a product that they need as a absolute. And you want to find that absolute in their business. Wow, that, really? And then it doesn't matter tomorrow if FedEx is going to run at all, they're going to have gasoline in their car. Right. And it's not a maybe, it's a must.
Tell me about that first contract in high school.
That particular contract that I negotiated was with a company owned by Jim Walters, Miami Cary, and it was a janitorial contract. And very acutely, can you imagine an 18-year-old dealing with a buyer, purchasing agent, right. at that particular time? You can look back and look at his visual, you know, makeup as you were actually forcing your way into the conversation of getting a raise and where you wanted your price points to be. And he's looking at this little kid, which I didn't look at myself at the time. But just looking at the expressions, but eventually after about three times going back and forth, we got the contract and we were able to get the contract at the numbers that we were going after. So, you know, I learned at a very early age, persistence, being able to have value, knowing what your value is, that you're able to be successful. And so from that was my first commercial contract negotiations at age 18.
You sound like a confident young man.
Wow.
Well, you know, something else happened at 18. I went to go get a job at AK Steel, which was Armco, which is where my father was. But I wanted to work as a salesman. And they told me I couldn't be a salesman. You know, I'd have to go back to school and or I can go out in the plant where my father was.
Right.
And I did not want to go out in the plant. And I said to myself, if I work for 30 years at Armco Steel, I'll end up with a watch and a pension. But if I work for 30 years for myself, I might be a little bit further off. And, you know, at age 18, I made that decision. And 30 years plus later, you know, I made the right decision.
How many watches you got now?
Well, many watches as I want.
I was reading about you, and you said most small businesses have a difficult time obtaining bank financing or loans. So how did you do financing the early ventures? Because you said when you were doing $50 million in Hightower Petroleum, you were unable to score a loan for your business. Why was that, and how did you work around that issue?
You know, traditionally in our communities, if you become successful in one thing, whether that's being an athlete, whether that's being a janitor or whatever that happens to be, that community that you grow up into really only looks at you as that.
Right.
So it was very difficult for me to transition from being a janitor, like our family had really grown into that community with over 100 and something plus employees, for that community or surrounding communities to think of me in construction and or petroleum. Right. It was not who you are.
Because even
and
though so, you were big, you weren't that.
It doesn't even matter being that big. That just wasn't you. That's right, not who you were supposed to be. You were supposed to be a janitor.
When your dad had all those contracts, he was still working?
Absolutely. Absolutely. He worked at the steel mill for 40 years, and he had his business, you know, since 56. So, you know, it was an overlap, and I grew up into that. But when getting back to
obtaining the loan,
obtaining the opportunity to go to a commercial bank lending institution and give them a business plan and show them how you're going to grow this business with the type of customers and even your exit, if that is what it happens to be, you're looked on with jaundiced eyes to say that's not possible for you. Mm-hmm. And what I say to most African-American businesses that start, you're going to put that business plan together. You're going to do all the things in terms of getting a relationship with a banker. You're going to take them out to lunch and all of that. And then the bank's still going to say no. Right. What do you do?
Right.
Do you stop? Do you get discouraged? Do you sit on the porch? Or do you go out and find a way to make it happen?
Right.
And I was one of those guys who found a way to make it happen. And one of the things that you find out about business is everybody is greedy at the end of the day.
Right.
And what does greed mean? Greed means that where does the money come from? And the money comes from a customer. All money actually starts because a customer pays. And as long as you've got a customer, a good paying customer, you can probably get the supply. All right. Mm-hmm. And that's the philosophy that I've used, not to go out and get a person with two dump trucks and then go out and try to find a supply for it, but go out and get a General Motors or go out and get a Duke Energy.
So you name drop.
Go out. Well, you know, but wait a minute. But wait a minute. That's very important because nobody want to support pennies,
right,
but they'll support dollars. Okay. And if you understand where the game is, and if you understand how to play the game, you find that greedy supplier over there that really want that customer that you have that access to, and you can get the supply. Now, it comes financing that. All you have to do is make sure that you get that person comfortable that they can get paid. Now, what they're looking for is your ability to pay it on your balance sheet or a bank. And if you don't have a balance sheet and you don't have a bank, there are instruments that you can actually put in play, which I had to figure out. And that's what I'm saying. You got to get off the porch. You know, dog got to go out there and chase. You got to chase that car sometimes.
Young people listening to this, veterans, dropping your dimes, science on you guys. You guys listening to this?
But what I was able to do is, and it's a very, very, you know, small but huge way of financing alternatively, and that is to use a lockbox at a bank. So when I invoice my customer and my customer pays into my account, there are treasury instructions to pay the supplier and to give me mine.
Okay.
And as long as the supplier is cool with that, it's going to go into a bank and he's going to get paid and I'm going to get paid too, then he's all right to go because now his credit is secured by really the customer. Okay. And I was able, because I was not able to get $5 worth of credit, okay, in the petroleum field, I had to figure out how I got my suppliers comfortable enough to sell me product, to sell to the state of Ohio, which was my first customer, and to customers thereafter for almost, I would say, 20, 25 years.
But let me just The same people that rejected you, which were the banks, you use them as part of the equation to get your customers happy with you and the suppliers happy with you. Put everybody in a room and you kind of sat back and let them all have faith in.
No. The banks was not in the conversation. The banks just had an instrument, okay? If they were in the conversation, they've been helping me finance it, okay?
Right.
They're only in the conversation because they got another way. They're a depository, okay?
Yeah.
And if you're not lending me no money, bank 3, 4, 5, and 6 is not lending me any money, you're still going to have a bank depository, okay?
Yeah.
And you just look at them as that, okay?
Exactly.
Not as a partner, okay?
Right.
And then they have instruments within that bank that you can utilize to help you. It's not that what they're bringing to the table, it's what you've been able to find out and figure out. None of you guys know that, do you? All right?
Yeah.
But you got to figure it out. And sometimes even we can teach our own community how to figure that out. And how do you get someone comfortable enough to give you money when you don't have that bank line of credit?
Mm-hmm.
They have instruments that can get them comfortable. Once they're comfortable, they can get paid, then they'll deliver for you.
Right. And this is the type of conversations that need to be had. When you look at the stats, they are saying that Black entrepreneurs are 3 times as likely to say that they need financing. This is a study from 2014 from the Wall Street Journal. But they choose not to apply.
Okay, so.
And that's out of fear of rejection.
Well, it's fear of rejection, but it's also using the wrong business model because it's very, nobody wants to get excited to lend you $5,000. Okay, so if your contract is $2,000 to $3,000 and you need $500 to get it done, it's not exciting to anyone. But my first contract was the state of Ohio. And let me tell you how that came about.
I can't wait to hear
it. And so, you were leveraging dad's context at this point.
You're on your own, okay? So the state of Ohio in 1979 had a set-aside that was passed in the state for minority bidding only. You had to be African-American, Hispanic, Native American, and maybe one or two other categories, but not females, okay? And what we were able to do was to actually, we began to quote all types of products that the state was setting aside. And I say all kind of products. We were selling lumber, drywall, metal studs, pinto beams, you know, whatever. And the state buys everything.
Right.
And whatever they were selling, we would go out and find a supplier, quote it. Because, again, the suppliers who had it previously being all non-minority could not bid on those particular products. Okay, so again, you had a customer that they could not get to unless it was through you. And then, of course, you had to put together a financial program to allow them to feel comfortable to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the state of Ohio set aside fuel one time. And BP, who had the entire state for the last 32 years, major oil companies don't play that game. It doesn't apply to them. They thought. So I went and quoted it and found another wholesale jobber, which is similar to where I am today.
Mm-hmm.
They quoted me, and my first contract was the entire state of Ohio, of which I took from BP. Okay. And not knowing anything about fuel, and that's another challenge that we had.
You
knew nothing about fuel, but I knew about business.
Right.
And as long as you see the back office of business, the accounting, the making sure people are billed, making sure people are paid on time, that's universal.
Right.
And that can be stuck into any kind of conversation or product. All right. So it didn't matter what the product was if you knew how to do the back office.
Exactly.
And that's what I learned growing up is the back office.
I read your first hire was an accountant.
Well, in High Towers Petroleum, actually was an accountant that I sponsored to come from Nigeria to the United States. And he obviously, bringing someone into the U.S. and being that sponsor, he was pretty loyal. So we starved together. it was okay that some days we didn't get paid, you know, when we were supposed to get paid.
Right.
But you suffer through what you got to suffer through to get to where you've got to go.
Exactly.
All right.
We're always talking about generational wealth in our show. And, I mean, you're highlighting it today. Because most people are starting from ground zero with very little being passed on. But you luckily come from 3 generations of family business and entrepreneurship. Tell me about the role that generational wealth and opportunity has played in your life thus far.
Well, you know, Reverend Jackson is a person that I highly respect, you know.
Reverend Jesse Jackson?
Reverend Jesse Jackson. Okay. Yeah, Reverend Jesse Jackson, someone I highly respect, you know, always says that talent and wisdom and effort is always trumped by inheritance.
Powerful.
And
okay, you're going to have to say that one more time. One more time. Talent.
Wisdom. Wisdom and effort is always trumped by inheritance.
There you have it.
Okay. So even if you look at today's president, he inherited what he had. And you start at $50 million. Well, I'm not really going to talk about the president here nationwide TV, but or radio. Right. However, it's just an example that even in my family, I have a COO, I've got a chief operating officer, another child, I've got an accounting manager, another child. And they also have inheritance that once I move on, that moves on to them. Right. And if they were total knuckleheads, okay, they could potentially lose it, but they have that opportunity. And that's what we haven't built in our historically into our communities, that transformation from one generation to another generation to have what we call legacy. Yes. And legacy is not built in one generation. Sure. Legacy is built in generations. And how do you, now that I've got my children and I've got my grandchildren now, that fourth generation, you know, showing up and working in the summers, you have to start them early. Okay, you can't wait till they're 21, 22, right, and then say, I'm going to now bring you back and get you involved with the business, because somebody else has their mind and their whole imagination in a whole nother area.
And you,
and you've lost. Well, we don't work in oil fields. We run a clean kind of business. But that would be a good job.
But the key thing is, though, you're staring them from a young age. Are you kind of staring your family into business, or are you just bringing, or are you just presenting the business and hopefully they'll grab on?
Well,
do you know what I mean? Like, you're not saying, hey, go sit in that office, go sit in that office, or you should consider going to business school. Are you saying that, or are you just having them be around you, seeing what you do on a day to day, going back to, like you said initially, that dining room table that you grew up in? But a much bigger version of it at this point.
We got to teach our kids how to work. Right. You can't assume that them going to school and playing sports is going to teach them how to work, how to answer a phone, how to have office mannerism, decor, You know, those things are not natural. Those things are taught.
Right.
And where I am today, my instincts and how I do business is a long historical, chronological building of how business is done.
Right.
Mm-hmm. All right. So people don't talk a lot about when I was in the medical business that did not succeed, or when I may have done several other types of businesses that did not succeed. You only see where I am today.
I'm so glad you said that.
And it was that persistence, which goes beyond just what you can think in your mind, but it has to have that heart, and that passion to get through not having no money, for weeks and months at a time, and paying those bills has got to be paid. But yes, I had a family of four kids by the time I was 23 and was still broke. Okay, but I knew where I was going, and I did what I needed to do to get there, and that's a fear that many people say, well, I've got a family, what can I do? You go out and work harder, and you make it happen.
So how do you find this this new generation? What's their aptitude? How do you find them as far as business-minded, like how you are? Do you see the same traits, or is it a different mindset with all these?
The biggest difference, which is something that there's a couple big differences. One, they're just, totally involved with technology such that they lose a little bit of human interaction, with people. Right. And this is in business is a people business. It's not a transaction. Okay. Then and so we they're not learning business and personal skills. They're learning transactional skills on that computer. All right. And that is something that you can't buy. You can't give to someone. They have to develop. All right. So that's one thing. And the other thing is the impatience of being able to get to success. And you can't get to success quickly. You get to success over a period of time. And if they don't, in what I see in this generation, if they don't have a success in a year and a half,
they're on to something else,
okay? Yeah, because this, and it's not, and life does not actually work that way.
Right.
And many times they're two-thirds or three-quarters of the way into their adulthood before they actually find that out.
Right.
Remember, I started when I was 18. Mm-hmm. So to be where I am now at age 60, you know, it took a long time. But I had to stick with something, all right, in order to make that something great.
Well, you know what I love that you said, Steve, is that you shared with us that there were trials and tribulations. There were failures, because I think that is what young people, even I find the staff I have, they just look at the success. They just want to talk about the millions. They don't ever want to talk about the struggle, the loss, the business that worked, the business that failed. But one of the other things that I think is important that you have said, and I want you to reiterate it on our show, is we talk about something called the wealth mindset. We did a show called For the Love of Money, and we talked about the wealth mindset. You need to see it and believe it in order to achieve it. And you have said, when asked, you don't think that you can be great, you'll never be great. And I knew I was going to be great a long, long time ago.
Well,
explain that to me.
I was great before other people knew I was great. And you have to know that who you are.
How'd you know you were great, though?
Because I knew who I was.
And who was that?
And that was a greatness that was somewhere inside of me that eventually would get out to the public.
Okay.
And every day, whether you were looking or whether you weren't looking, I was doing an outstanding job at whatever it was that I was doing. And I practiced in the dark when nobody else was looking of doing the right things.
Right.
And that's how you actually rise to be something of greatness. Doing it day in and day out, month in and month out, year in and year out, over a period of time, that greatness becomes. Because anything short of that, you're just being good or just having a job or just getting along. And I never had that in me just to get along. I, you know, actually went through a process where my brothers and my sisters had to go, all right? I mean, I had to fire people who did not see the same outlook in business and life, share the vision, because they will mess your vision up.
Right.
And you got to understand, I started with my mother and my father and my brothers and sisters being over me, my older brother, not my sister. She was younger than I was. But at some point in time, even my mother and myself had to separate.
Wait, you fired mom?
Wow.
She knew when to leave.
Mom's not when to leave.
Never have to have that conversation. However, what it amounts to is that you've got to know what's right. And yes, it's good to have family. It's good to have people around you. But there's still, to this day, family that cannot work for you.
Right.
Okay,
right.
You cannot work for it. For mm-hmm. our company,
mm-hmm.
and it's not because you don't love them,
right?
Okay, it's not. It's just that they don't have that same work ethic or the same habits or the same type of outlook on life
commitment and
commitment that you do. So therefore, you got to make that judgment and decision that yes, I like you, I love you, but you can't work with me, and that, you know, that could be your kids.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
But that's
I agree with you 100%.
Well, people, two black guys with good credit. We told you we were going to bring you some gems, but
wow.
What? Greed is good. You have to work hard. Sometimes you got a shadow box in the dark, and you got to know who you are. And if mama's got to go, mama's got to go. Two black guys with good credit. We're sitting in with Mr. Stephen Hightower of Hightower's Petroleum. Big things.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move. By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
This commercial break is brought to you by Canvas Malibu. Canvas Malibu is a boutique and contemporary art gallery located in Malibu, California. At Canvas Malibu, it starts with art, and their curated offering of shoes, apparel, accessories, and art are a definite must-see. Canvas Malibu is located in the Malibu Country Mart or online at canvasmalibu.com.
Welcome back to Two Black Guys with Good Credit. We are sitting in with the master, the guru, the one, the only, Steve Hightower of Hightower's Petroleum. I know that break must have felt like forever because he is dropping gems and you don't want to miss a minute. That being said, Sean, what do you have for Mr. Hightower?
Mr. Hightower, we did an entrepreneur show called I've Got a Great Idea. And one of the areas I found challenging and we couldn't even get a lot of information on is how do you go from small to medium business, like medium-sized business? Most of us, especially young African-Americans, we stay in the small business zone. How do you transition from small to medium?
I would say the two things that, again, I'm focused on trying to get the African-American community to look at business-to-business versus business-to-consumer. And in each case, there's a different pathway in terms of how do you get to where you got to go relative to a B2B. And scaling has to do with basically what your risk tolerance is in terms of what you can conceive, not what you have in front of you, okay? Because what you have in front of you is small. It may be one. It may be your first one. But you got to be able to know what your end goal is. Mm-hmm. And so if you look at a person like myself who basically early started with, you know, $1 million business, and you know, $2 million business, and then 10, 50, 100 to get to 200 plus million in revenue, you have to be very deliberate about trying to push to that. And you got to be able to count your dollars. So if I couldn't count how many units that I had to sell in order to get to 200 million, there's probably not a possibility of me getting in 200 million. Wow. As an example, if I'm a barber and I cut hair and I'd get $40 a head, I mean, I can only do 8 heads a day, 10 heads a day, you know, if I'm only doing a head an hour. Right. And if I work 7 days a week, I can only cut X amount of heads. And if I multiply that out, I'd still not get to $1 million. Right. So if you're in a business that you can't count to $1 million, you're not going to get to $1 million. All right. And if, so if I can get to, if I'm trying to get to $1 billion, I got to be able to know that that's possible. And it, along the way, you got to be able to make a very deliberate effort in order to, you know, go to that.
As simple as that sounds.
It's very simple, but
some people don't count the widgets. They don't count the widgets.
That's basics. Those are A, B's, and C's.
Or they don't feel their business is scalable.
You just feel one day you're going to wake up and it's not scalable.
Listen, but all you have to do is change your business. It's not, that's not, that's not. That's very simple. Okay? You know, change your business. Okay, right. And see, the thing is that everything sells. But finding something that people have to have, and I use toilet paper as an example. If you, I mean, I don't, whether it's commercial, industrial, residential, you name it, whatever market that happens to be, they all use toilet paper. And if you had 1% of the toilet paper that was sold in any market, you'd be doing millions.
You got a lot going on.
Gasoline just happens to be one of those types of commodities where you have so many kind of people in every category that you can think of will buy gasoline. So you got the opportunity to have so many different customers. Right. All right. So rather than finding something that somebody might want to go to your store on the corner, in the hood, on that particular block, that particular day, all right, is much harder than getting someone who has to have their fuel or their toilet paper tomorrow in their organization or in their home, because it's going to be there regardless. And it's so, then that's a whole different mindset. And there's so many other things like that in every industry where they have to have it. And all you have to do is go find it and offer it to them. Wow. Okay.
That's right.
You're leaving me breathless. You're the guy adding some relief, but I just got nothing to say except this is science. I hope everybody's listening and taking notes to this show. This is a great show. My other question to you, you were able to lock in clients like FedEx, General Motors, Walmart to help you, make you transition from small to medium-sized business. What is your style and what is your approach to closing a deal, and how does that work for you?
Patience. Most of the larger contracts that you get did not happen overnight. My first system-wide or enterprise-wide, which when I say that, that means everyone, every organization within that company, all of their divisions that buy fuel, was a company called Synergy, which today Synergy is a utility company that is now owned by Duke Energy. And there was a point in time for maybe 10 years, we sold Synergy at one of their sites in Cincinnati, one tank per month for years, until we had the opportunity, because we got involved with technology and we were first to market in this whole e-marketplace many, many years ago, and we were prepared and ready that we plugged into that e-marketplace, which was a utility e-marketplace, and that opened us up to have the first opportunity to do all of Synergy, okay, which was Ohio, Indiana, and Kentucky. Mm-hmm. So that was our first system-wide, but that was after...
Did you know that was coming?
After 5-10 years of doing that one tank per month for that long, and that's all you was going to get, right. No, you didn't see it coming, okay? But you didn't stop, and you did a good job with that one tank, okay,
wow,
per month.
That's so important, right? For people.
And that's the key. You
and
didn't screw up.
Good service, good quality, good customer service. And
as simple as one tank per month, and you know it's peanuts, okay? Because today, we do all of Duke, okay? And when I say we do all of Duke, now we're, with that merger, the Synergy people took us with them. And so now we do North Carolina, South Carolina, and part of Florida. And just this past January, there was a vortex that came in and dropped the temperature into the 0 degrees. And we did over 4,000 loads in that 1 month just to keep everybody in the Southeast warm.
Wow.
Wow. Jeez. Well, wow. I'll say this. You had to step up to capture those larger clients. You talked about trust. You talked about patience, right?
Yes.
But negotiation. I mean, there's a stat here. They say only 29% of jobs, I'm just using an example, of job seekers actually negotiate their salary.
Yes, there's people, 70, the average man right. in the workplace. Yep.
So 71% of people don't even take the time to negotiate for themselves, right? But those who do, they say 84% are successful when they do actually have the confidence to negotiate.
Stepping up.
Do you have a certain negotiation style? Any key, you know, negotiating tips you might want to provide to our audience?
Well, very fortunately for me, I've never had to negotiate a job because I never worked for anybody else mm-hmm. but myself. And my father, he didn't require that I go through that process. Mm-hmm. So... But from a business standpoint,
from a business client standpoint,
you always want to listen and you always want to know what that client is really wanting, not what you want to give to that client. And most of us really go in and not actually understand or listen to what it is the client wants versus what you want to give them. And so many people approach me all the time with what they want to do, their dreams, their hopes, their aspirations, and want me to invest into that. Okay. And what I always say to people, find out what it is that I do and how you can help me do that better. And then we might be able to do business. And that's and there's a whole, it doesn't matter whether it's me, whether it's Kroger's, whether it's General Motors. What is it that you do? How do you do it? Because GM does it different than Duke. Duke does it different than Nissan. Nissan does it different than FedEx. Okay. They all have something different about how they do it. So you got to listen.
Well, as a side note, Mr. Todd, we different. To my guys with good credit, we different. We got to connect to her.
and as different, and as different as you want to be, you're still the same because you've got dialogue. You've got someone who is at the table with you, hopefully giving you knowledge and information. Nothing's different about what we've just done other than the people that you're doing it with.
Absolutely. So sometimes does it take even months before you even approach a client?
No. Why should you wait a month before you approach a client?
I heard this in the banking world where they had these where they have these very large clients before they even contact them. They've done months of research in advance. So I was just wondering what your style was.
Well, my style is not to wait for months of research. Because if I had to research you for a month or so, I probably went on to something else. Okay?
So, let me just say one more
thing. I'm not going to say that's a bad thing to do, not to do your research, but I'm just saying, why wait months and months unless, you know, I'm sure there's industries that might require that.
This is the financial industry.
Let me just say one more thing. This is Mr. Anal, and this is Mr. Off the Cuffs. Where do you fall in line? Like, because we're always battling back and forth.
I'm a off the cuff anal person.
Balance.
And you got to be that.
See, and I love that answer. And moving it forward, I want to ask you something. You are an ISO member, ISO certified. So I want to know what role that played in helping you to transition your business. But I want Dion to give me a quick definition of the ISO, please.
So the ISO, International Organization of Standardization, they are based in Geneva. They've published over 22,000 different standards to ensure products, services, processes conform to the highest quality that is acceptable across the globe.
So how does that help? How does that help move from small to medium or medium to large?
I was always an early adopter of technology. As I told you, that opportunity with the utility industry where I actually had e-commerce before the industry was doing e-commerce. I was like one of three in this whole new e-commerce platform in the petroleum industry. When you talk in terms of ISO and a quality standard, wanting to do business with the automotive industry requires that you are ISO certified. In the automotive OEM industry, when I say OEM, the original equipment manufacturer, which is the GMs, the Fords, the Chryslers, we were doing business with them long before most other petroleum wholesalers were doing business with them. BP, again, getting back to who controlled that market. BP had Ford, Chrysler, GM, Nissan, Honda, everybody in terms of initial feels that goes into those cars when they come off the assembly line. In order for you to even be considered, you had to go ISO. We went ISO very, very early. And that's a standard that just says that you have to now document your processes and you're in a continuous improvement process. And you know how to handle failures and you document your failures to make improvements in that process. So we were early adopters of that. And as a result, outside of BP, we were the first company to get a OEM actual initial feels. And what is initial feels? That is the first 5 gallons that go to every vehicle that comes off an assembly line. And if you look at all the GM plants throughout North America, every car, every plant throughout North America, including Mexico, gets our gas. And that was done in 2008, right at the time where the crash was coming. Now, 5 years earlier, we had started 5 years earlier pursuing GM, making sure we got our ISO, making sure that we did the testing, got it approved. But after 2 years of approval process, year three, we were ready to go, and there was no cigar. Year four, we were ready to go, and there was no cigar. Year five, they were going into bankruptcy. BP probably wasn't treating them as well as they would thought that they should be treated. Mm-hmm. And it was 1 month before they went into file for bankruptcy that we took over General Motors. But we were prepared. And the only person, only other person other than BP that could have gone forward because we had had that product pre-tested was ourselves. Wow. So it was either BP or me. And we had that opportunity to go. And I used 2008 as a very critical date and time because if you look, that's when we got our first black president, too.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right.
And that's when we got our first black company to take over in that OEM initial fields industry. And subsequently to that, once you're able to do GM, well, hey, guess what? You can probably do me, too. And that's where, and that's how you get that first one to get that second one. But that took 5 years.
Right.
Okay.
Great. Just so you know, today we're recording the day on Martin Luther King's 50th anniversary of his death. So, hey, greatness is meets greatness all the time.
And I want to say one other thing. Recession-proof business. That's all I'm going to say.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of businesses that's recession-proof.
Mm-hmm.
You just
got to
find them.
Mm-hmm.
Find your toilet paper.
You know, you definitely have a ton of great sayings, and one of them that I really like as well is going deep, is the football analogy about going deep versus what.
You don't even know football.
Listen, man,
football.
I've seen the game.
You don't even know what
Philly
means.
Well, he plays soccer.
I understand business. Philadelphia. My wife's from Philly. But what I wanted to get into is something which is really important, which is that oftentimes people jump ship. And what I mean by that, instead of looking at how they can go deeper in the industry they are, they jump ship. So I wanted to have you just discuss that philosophy, because I think that's a lot of what you have done at Hightower Petroleum.
Right. Early on when we talked about what, when I got my first state contract, I was really running wide. I didn't matter whether it was pinto beans, whether it was electrical supplies, whether it was guardrail or posts for light poles, okay? Mm-hmm. Whatever the state was buying. And, you know, in typical categories in the industrial purchasing, there's about 28 different categories in which they purchase. The category that, and so if you're out trying to sell fuel one day and you're trying to sell clothing the next day and you're trying to sell food the next day and you're selling fasteners this day, you know, that's going wide. You're not really getting down the field. All right. But when you begin to say, all right, now I'm going to begin to focus in the petroleum industry and now we're going to add monitoring. Okay. We're going to add tank installations. We're going to start doing other things that take me deeper in the petroleum space. And then you come up and say, okay, now we're going to take it into a whole nother level in the energy space, and petroleum is energy, so you're going to get deeper in energy. So now we're talking about bringing in power generation. We're talking about bringing in alternative fuels. We're talking smart cities. We're talking, LED lighting, all of those, but it's all in the energy space. So now I'm becoming deeper and deeper in the energy space and being respected in that industry for being an expert in that particular industry. And you cannot be an expert in all industries.
Right. Yes.
Okay.
Expertise has tremendous value.
You know, I come from a Wall Street background, and we were always, everybody's talking about successful businesses always go public, and the thing is to go public. You're privately held. So why not go public? Why stay private for all these years?
Because I can do what I want to do, and I don't have to ask nobody.
Well, there you have it.
That's the first thing. Now, do I like the opportunity at some place to exit and hold that open as a possibility of an exit strategy as an alternative possibility? It exists. But I don't want to sell cheap. I don't want to go put myself out there and lose control. Because, again, you got to understand, in that many years of being in business, how many times I should have not been in business tomorrow, mm-hmm. and how many people offered me money that would just have taken my company that I turned down. So there's always been money available if you wanted to give your company away.
Right.
And I never wanted to give my company away. Just fortunately, I got past that critical mass to right. where no longer I'm asking and begging to try to see if I'm going to make my payroll tomorrow.
Right.
And so now that I'm at that level, I can now plan how I want to exit
yes.
right. and when wow. I want to exit wow. and mm-hmm. how I want to exit.
All right. Next okay. question for you then. You mentioned South Africa a number of times, doing business in South Africa. Tell us about what you're doing in South Africa and why you went to an emerging market like South Africa.
Well, I just like even getting into the petroleum business, it was by accident. I actually went to South Africa on a safari, and it was going to be a 10-day safari that turned into a 3-day safari and a 7-day work week, which is usually what happens to me. And and in that,
the elephants, the giraffes inspired you, the lions.
Now, there was a young lady who worked for me who was South African, and she was a businesswoman who really actually wanted me to see the business atmosphere in South Africa, of which I found was a very, very strong environment for Africans, South Africans today, and what they lacked was some of the skills and basically knowledge that we could bring mm-hmm. with our experiences to a new emerging set of businesses, okay? Right. And they've only been post-apartheid 21 years,
right.
So many of them don't know really the roots of business. Or they have an image of business the same way they were managed by the oppressors. And so things, I mean, there's a lot of education and a lot of support that you can actually provide. Now, the key is that element of the African-American experience. We all being black. And we all experience the same thing relative to discrimination and oppression in America as an African-American, in South Africa as South Africans. And to be able to, once they are now in charge of businesses, of the government, of agencies, when they find brothers like myself who are conscious, who are capable of helping, who's willing to help,
right.
not just for themselves, but to help the country itself mm-hmm. and the African businesses there themselves, mm-hmm. then that's embraced. Mm-hmm. And I was embraced. And as a result, we're doing smart ports in the city of Durban.
So you did exactly
we've got developments. Well,
you helped them. You found out what they needed. You didn't go in there with over talking to them like, here's what I have, oil. You said, what do you need and how can I make my business work with you?
Right. And with the exception of our smart cities and our some of our technology in the smart space, a lot of things that I'm doing, I never thought that I would be doing. But the opportunities that was set in my lap to say, here, go develop this. And I had the skill set to know how to bring the right people to the table to develop some of those projects. And they are going very, very well. I will say that as an African American, you probably would have a better shot of doing $1 billion on the continent of Africa than you will here in the United States.
Wow. You're going to send the pilgrims back home, man. Everybody's
going to be like, well, I mean, now you better have your stuff together because you'll come back home naked.
Going to somebody else.
don't think they don't know. Don't play them cheap. Okay.
So now I'm going to take a line from Jay-Z in his latest album, 444. Jay said, I bought every V12 engine. What is that
now? I'm
getting
the beatbox background.
Yeah. Oh, is that what it was?
Let's just do this a cappella. I got it. Thank you, though. So Jay said, I bought every V12 engine. Wish I could take it back to the beginning. I could have bought a place in Dumbo before it was Dumbo for like $2 million. That same building today is worth $25 million. Guess how I'm feeling? Dumbo. So my question to you is, do you have any moments in your past like that where you wish you could get a financial do-over? Was there that deal that man, I wish I had done it. That opportunity that, man, I wish I had taken it.
Well, many of those types of deals did not, were not accomplished, not because I didn't try to get them done. It's because I didn't have the financial support to get them done. Right. So I never had passed up a good deal on my own.
Okay. This man is tough, people. He is tough. No. Yeah, he's like, miss a deal.
You don't try to do everything. Again, everybody right. else's dream Focus. Is not your dream. Right. But, you know, there are things and opportunities that, I mean, could have been home runs out the park. And I should already be into the billion-dollar category, but just did not have the financial support in order to get it over the goal line.
That's the truth. Like you said, this man is tough. He is not playing. He is giving it to you raw and uncut.
Pencil and paper, people. Take notes.
Stephen Hightower, Hightower's Petroleum. If you didn't know it before, you know it now. This man is getting it done, and he is hanging out with us. It's two black guys with good credit who wants to be a millionaire. Do you really want to be a millionaire?
KnickKnackDirect.com is the fast, easy way to shop online. To buy an item from any U.S. website, just go to KnickKnackDirect.com. That's NICNATDirect.com. Choose your method of payment and we'll ship, handle duties, and deliver your item straight to your door. I'm Sean of KnickKnackDirect.com, and you have my word.
What's up? I know you're still with us because this show is on fire. Gems? Gems? Yeah, we're dropping gems. And the thing that I want to add in is business is universal. You guys weren't here in the break when Mr. Hightower mentioned that to us. Business is universal. So while you may hear the term African-American being used, well, yes, he's an African-American in the oil industry. So yes, we're going to use that term. But the gems he's dropping, those are universal gems because business is universal. So now we're going to have a little fun. You all that follow us, you know our speed round. It's usually Sean and I going back and forth, battling it out. Well, now we're going to turn the table to Mr. Hightower in this speed round. So it's going to be short, it's going to be sweet, and it's going to be interesting. Dion?
So just doing a little research, there's definitely a correlation between successful people and their morning habits. What is your morning routine?
My morning routine is to obviously get up, take a shower, do what you got to do, get dressed, and get in the office every morning.
All right. Life insurance, yes or no?
Absolutely.
You still have it?
Absolutely. You have to be prepared. All right. Because you're going to die. You know that, right?
Stocks, bonds, real estate. Which do you invest in and why?
I do a little of each and not a lot of any. I invest into my business. Right now I'm growing my business and that's where my investment is.
You bet on yourself. Retirement at 65, fact or fiction?
55.
Well, I'm 61 and I thought that I'd be retired by now. And I know retirement in the future is going to look different than most people think about retirement. So I'll never stop. I just may do something different.
Groupon/coupons, yes or no, Mr. Hightower?
What?
Do you still use coupons or Groupon discounts?
Neither one.
Credit union or traditional bank?
Finally, we're in the traditional banking industry. And it's a speed round, but we got up to $235 million in revenue before we got our first commercial bank loan. Oh, so everything between zero to $245 million was done through financing, through trade credit. And that's the only way we were able to survive.
Okay, so I have to ask this question. Financing through trade credit, can you just explain that a little bit more for the people on what exactly is trade credit?
Our suppliers actually funded us, again, through the mechanisms for the most part, but at a certain point, they gave you a little open credit, but for the most part, it was all through suppliers. It was not bank credit. Banks was not going to help me get to where I had to go.
And now they're running you down, right?
Now it's a whole different story.
All right. Bitcoin, take it or leave it.
Thinking about it.
Do you own or lease your car?
I own, never lease. Leasing is not a good option for someone who drives a lot. You'll do that one time.
How did you end up owning part of a soccer team, FC Cincinnati?
It wasn't on purpose. It was someone who was working for the Cincinnati Bengals organization, Jeff Birding, who is now the president and CEO of the FC Cincinnati. And actually, I was pursuing lights at the Bengals stadium, which Jeff was responsible for. And he had an idea. And so I gave him $50,000 for his idea for mine.
Is that the lights?
We didn't get the lights.
That's a big
one. So you are also, we want to know, what's next for you? Because you've had the pleasure of being appointed by the president. You've been part of the Department of Interiors, the National Park Foundation, Energy, National Petroleum Council. So what's next for you?
You know, the whole notion of smart cities and power generation and in long-term basically generating power from alternative sources. That's where I'm really, really focused. We have a great business in the petroleum space. That's how we made our money. I'm not ashamed of that. Embrace it.
Right.
We know that it may not be here forever. So we're not, you know, stagecoach riders and, you know, going to run it to where it's no longer a viable option. So we made a commitment about 6 years ago to get into clean energy and to do power and energy efficiency. And that is really where we've got focused efforts. And we really feel good about helping change tomorrow.
That was a good speed round. And
well, can I end with something?
Absolutely.
You know, I think
for sure.
I think
no.
I think that there's one thing that really stops most people from getting in business and taking the types of chances that I'm talking about taking. And again, it's almost like a rocket ship. You've got to have full thrust. You got to really, really come with it all the time. That's how you get to the moon. Okay, and I'm trying to get to $1 billion, and that's what I have to do to get there. I mean, full thrust, all out, all the time. But there's one thing that stops everyone, and that's the fear of failure. Mm-hmm. And I say to all of our listening audience, I never see failure as failure, but as a learning experience. I never see failure, but as a way to practice my techniques and to perfect my performance.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I never see failure as failure, but as a game that I must play to win. Because you're not judged by the number of times that you fail. You judge by the number of times that you succeed. Mm-hmm. And the number of times that you can succeed is in direct proportion to the number of times that you can fail and keep on trying. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Got room for me on that cruiser going on, buddy, man.
Well, I would like to be the first to thank Mr. Hightower for sitting in with us. This was more than I imagined. Like, it was really fantastic. I think for our listening audience, you have shared so much. You've been open with us. So thank you for coming on Two Black Guys with Good Credit. And I'll pass the mic to my man, Sean.
Yeah, I'd really just like to thank you. As you know, I've always wanted to be a businessman from the time I can remember, and this is the first time I've really sat with somebody that really, really, truly inspired me. And I really, like I said, it's more than what I expected it to be. And I just thank you for taking the time to come on our show.
Yes, I want to just reiterate, thank you. Inspired, enlightened in so many ways. Just to get to the business of the show, please, everyone, especially after this episode, email us your questions to tbgwgc@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Two Black Guys Good Credit. And don't forget to leave us a 5-star review to make it easier for others to find us. Like Peter J., who said, I'm glad I found this podcast. For someone who is interested in creating generational wealth and maintaining finances, it's very insightful. Not only are they dropping gems, the humor makes it compelling to listen to. So thank you, Peter J. And if you want to find out and follow Mr. Hightower and find out more, definitely follow him on Twitter. His handle is Steve Hightower, #1. You can also find him on Facebook at Stephen Hightower. And also online at his website, www.stephenhightower.com. or www.hightowerff, that's F as in Frank, F as in Frank, .org.
One more to add to Mr. Hightower's profile, if you want to find him also at www.hightowerspetroleum.com. My name is Dion Nichols, also known as the lady with the history, the stats, and the cold hard facts, and I'm out of here.
Well, there you have it. Don't let fear hold you back. The big boss has spoken. Do not let fear hold you back. Step up to the plate. It's not about the swings. It's about the hits. Two black guys with good credit. We had an awesome show with Mr. Awesome. Stephen Hightower. This week, my bottom line, there's so many gems that Mr. Hightower gave us, but the one that really stuck to me was one that he said in the end. Well, two. One is, don't ever let fear hold you back. You got to step up to the plate and take a swing. The other one that he told me, that he said is, it's not about going wide, it's about going deep. Become an expert in what you do. Do it to the best of your ability and look for the opportunities that exist in what you're doing today. Because becoming an expert has inherent value. And that's something that I'm going to take from this podcast back into my own business and to make sure that we keep drilling down and that we tap everything. Okay, there's another thing he said. God, he said so many things. The last thing that he said that I really did like, you can't make a million if it doesn't add up to a million. So sometimes you have to reverse engineer the numbers to see if you can hit the dream that you think you want to hit. I'm Arlington, and you know what I say is the game of life. It's wants versus needs. I'm out.
My takeaway is, rewind this show, listen to it all over again, and look at it in your life and apply things to it. Don't think, be inspired by Mr. Hightower, but understand there are gems in here that you can do to change your life. So you need to listen to this show once, twice, maybe even three times to catch what he's saying and then apply it to your life. I'm Sean. I'm out. Your money is your money. Keep it where it belongs, in your pocket.
Black guys.
This podcast is brought to you by Uma. If you're a small business owner, now more than ever, you understand the importance of being able to adapt so you can always be there for your customers. Uma Office is a cloud-based business phone service that gives small business owners the flexibility needed to run a business efficiently from anywhere. With features like mobile and desktop apps, a virtual receptionist, and call recording, you can do more for less. Uma Office starts at $19.95 per user per month with no contracts. To learn more, go to uma.com or call 833-TRY-OOMA.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. From a local business to a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.